right, Matthew 6, we're going to look at verse 25 through 34. Familiar passage here, probably with most, if not everyone. He says, "Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, for what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body, what shall you put on? Is not the life more than meat, and the body more than raiment? Behold, the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are ye not much better than they? Which of you, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature? And why take ye thought for raiment? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Wherefore, if God so clothe the grass of the field, which today is, and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? Therefore, take no thought, saying, What shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after these things do the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knoweth that ye have need of all these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof." Do you hear how many times just in those nine to ten verses, that it said, take no thought, take no thought, take no thought. And so often, I'm just as guilty, maybe even more so than you, because some of you have some real struggles right now, some real problems, if you will. But oftentimes, and in lesser problems, I think about it too much. And it has become commonplace to us. We're speaking on respectable sins or acceptable sins. No sin is respectable. That's not what the author means. He is saying the sins that we give respect to, that we almost make an allowance for, that we don't count them for what they are. And this one, I think, could be right there amongst the top of that list in being anxiety and frustration. We think of anxiousness and frustration, and it's such a normal part of our lives oftentimes that we don't see it for what it really is, that it's sin against God. And life often gets difficult and even sometimes painful. There's physical pain, there's emotional pain, there can be spiritual pain, if you will, but it gets difficult. And there is a difference, you know. I don't know, the illustration maybe of your car breaks down or something. That's difficult sometimes to deal with. How am I going to get it fixed? What's going to happen with this and that? But then you think about, I don't know, somebody's in a car accident. There's tons of examples that could be used for either one of these, but just differentiating between difficult and painful. Maybe a car accident that leaves someone disabled. Those things are painful, you know, and difficult. And I like what Mr. Bridges said. He said difficulties usually occur in ordinary life events, and pain usually comes through extraordinary life events. I mean, you think about it. The car breaking down, that's a normal thing. You know, that's not abnormal. If we have a car very long, it's going to break down. And so those things like that, difficult circumstances arise daily. They just come from your ordinary life. But oftentimes, things that are painful, that really cause us to hurt, come through extraordinary circumstances, through unique circumstances. So we're going to focus on the difficulties today and our response to them. So we need not be surprised that we have difficulties in life. We live in a fallen world. We are fallen creatures. So the results of sin is death, sickness, illness, trouble, trials, problems. And so therefore, we need not be surprised that we're going to have difficult circumstances. What we need to focus on is our response to those difficult circumstances. Frustration and anxiety come from the very opposite of what we should be doing, and that is trusting God. And 13 times in the New Testament, we're taught to trust God. There's character traits that are taught, character things that should be associated with our character that we should do in the New Testament. And I think this was the third most mentioned in the New Testament, was to trust God. And oftentimes, we do just the opposite. That word anxious, we talk about anxious and anxiety and frustration, was used six times just in that text that we just read. And it's associated with the short-term circumstances, anxiousness is. He says, don't be anxious over what you're going to eat. Don't be anxious over what you're going to wear. Don't be anxious over where you're going to live. Don't be anxious over the unknown, the future. He says to fear not, to don't be afraid, to be careful for nothing, to cast all your cares upon Him. And all these texts, He's telling us to trust Him. We're right there in Matthew 6. Turn over to Matthew 10, 31. Matthew chapter 10, verse 31. He says, fear not, therefore, ye are more of more value than sparrows. But look in the previous, let's see, let's for context, let's read verse 29. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? So two sparrows you could buy for a little bit of nothing. They were very cheap. No value to them, in a sense. And he says, and one of them shall not fall to the ground without your Father. So even the most minute of creation doesn't go unnoticed to God. And he says, but the very hairs of your head are all numbered. We all know this text. We know this verse. And yes, it is talking about the omniscience of God. He knows everything. He knows every hair of our head. But with that said, if He knows all that, is in control of all that, shouldn't we be able to trust Him? So why are we anxious? Why are we frustrated? So it's bigger than just knowing that God knows all that. We have to trust Him. And so He goes on, He says, fear not, therefore, ye are more value than many sparrows. He said, you're worth more than many sparrows. What? There's only one of God's creation that He sent Jesus Christ to die for, in the sense, not one, but it was it not mankind? It was not the sparrows, it was not the animals, it was not the flowers, it was but for you and I, human beings. And so you have more value than all of the rest of creation. And so He says, fear not. And in Luke 12, you don't have to turn there. You can if you choose to, but I'm going to turn there and read it for you. Luke 12, verse 5, He says, but I forewarn you whom ye shall fear. Fear Him after He hath killed him, hath to cast into hell. Yea, I say unto you, fear Him. Talking about God, Jesus Christ. Are not five sparrows sold for two farthings, and not even one of them forgotten before God? But even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows. So once again, He's the same text here. He's illustrating that we shouldn't fear, that we have more value than the sparrows, and God knows them. He knows the very hairs on your head, so we shouldn't be afraid. We shouldn't fear. Another familiar passage, I'm sure, to most here, but dealing with trusting God. In Philippians 4:6, we're told this, be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be known unto God. To be careful for nothing. And Pastor just had covered 1 Peter in chapter 5 just several weeks ago. But you remember the verse that says, casting your cares upon Him, for He careth for you. And He, you know, so when we say don't be afraid, when we say don't be anxious, generally speaking to one another, what are we saying? I know what we're saying, but how are we saying that? Am I commanding Steve? If I said, hey, man, don't worry about that. Don't be anxious. God's got, am I giving him a command or am I? Go ahead, Wayne. Don't let yourself be consumed. Yep. Anybody else have something to offer about that? Well, we're actually, generally speaking, when we say that, we're saying it as an encouragement. We're trying to encourage them. Don't be consumed with that. Don't. But when God says it, it's not, hey, Brother Danny, you know, be encouraged. Don't. It's a command. So if God says to do something and we don't do it, what would we call that? Sin. So anxiousness, anxiety, frustration, it's not coming from God as, hey, if you can, don't let that bother you. No, he's saying, don't do it. Fear not. Don't be afraid. Cast your cares upon him. Be careful for nothing. These are commands, whether it's coming from Peter, from Paul, from Jesus himself. They're all inspired. They were inspired words of God, so therefore it's from God. So therefore, in short, anxiety and frustration, and lack of trusting God is sin. Wayne? You're right. And think about it. I mean, we could go from the youngest in here to the oldest. Cody's probably the youngest. Cody, how old are you, 20? 20? And Brother Danny may be the oldest in here, I think, possibly, at 86. But think how, just when I think about that, 20 years, 86 years, whatever, or in between, 87, huh? Soon to be. Are you 87 now? Okay, 87. Well, regardless, think of how many days God has provided food, raiment, and houses, whether it's for 20 years. Like you said, his mercies are new every morning. How many mornings has God's mercy been faithful? It's new every morning, and he is faithful. So you see, just the very fact that we are anxious or troubled or worried or become frustrated, the sin in that. If we would just think about the current situation, hey, how many of you don't have to raise your hands, but how many of you have stressed or been worried about how you're going to pay a bill or some type of financial problem? Almost everyone in here has been there. But if you would just look back when you're at that point, whether it's today or whether it was yesterday, how many times has God provided all those things? And should we not trust him? Say, God, I don't understand it. I don't know how it's going to work, but you're going to take care of it. But instead, we let that consume us and become anxious and worried. And so, simply put, anxiety is sin. And there's, you could add to the reasons. I'm using the two reasons that Mr. Bridges gives for anxiety. He said, number one, it's a distrust in God. It's the exact opposite of trusting him. And number two, it's a lack of acceptance of God's providence in our lives. So when we are anxious over something, it generally comes down to we're either don't trust God, or if we do trust him, we know he'll take care of us. It's the lack of acceptance of God's providence in our lives. And that's probably, the latter is maybe the greater reason for you and I oftentimes. We know that God is faithful. We know that we can trust him. We know God is going to take care of us. We've been told that just through these very few scriptures that we've read this morning. We know that. But I can speak for me, even when those circumstances hit, it's not that I don't think God's going to take care of me. The struggle I have is the lack of acceptance of God's providence in our lives. Or paraphrased or put differently, maybe I don't like how God's going to take care of it. Maybe it's not the way I want him to take care of it. Or oftentimes our agenda is a little different than God's. And that's where the anxiety comes in and the frustration, because it's not going the way we desire it to go. God's going to take care of you. You think about Joseph. and the struggles he went through, was God not faithful to him? God not only was faithful, God blessed him abundantly. But it wasn't necessarily his plan, the way of getting there and that going through life. And you could go through all of Scripture. We could go around the room. Oftentimes, the way we've planned life may not be the way life has turned out. But God is faithful in taking care of us. And so he says, you know, in trusting God, God takes care of the birds and the lilies, and he'll take care of our needs. 1 Peter 5:7, you know, casting your care upon him, for he cares for you. You see that anxiety is a sin because it's, in essence, calling God a liar. What does it say? That he cares for you? When we have become anxious over a situation not being resolved, in essence, what we're saying, without saying it, is that God doesn't care for us. Says that God won't take care of us. I'm sure we could go around the room, and almost everyone has had this happen to them, if not everyone. Many of you, and it may be more harmful or more hurtful, I should say, from children, your own children, but nonetheless, it still can hurt no matter who does this. And so everyone in here probably could say that this has happened to them from someone. But how many of you have had someone say, I don't trust you? Or someone... And that hurts when somebody doesn't trust you, especially somebody you care about. What about somebody that you love? What if they said, I don't love you? It hurts, doesn't it? And that's what anxiousness is to God. It's in essence, Brother Danny saying, God, I don't trust you. Or God, you don't love me. When he's told you and he's proven himself, not just telling you, he has proven it over and over. Like I said, we can go through... How many days are in 87 years? And God has proven it that many days that he's faithful, that he loves you, that he cares. And yet to say, well, you don't care about me or I don't trust you. How hurtful that is to God. And that's what we do in anxiousness. And also in failing to accept God's providence. Remember Romans 8:28? That all things work together for good for them that are the called. Who are the called? The saved. You and I, the children of God. According to His purpose. For our good and His glory. And so we should trust His providence in these things. I want to read to you just a short quote here from Mr. Bridges concerning this. If I can get there. He was using the illustration. He was a preacher that traveled quite often, and some of you can relate to this, but he was talking about that he was prone to anxiety. And he said his anxiousness oftentimes came because he would have to catch a flight to get somewhere, and then oftentimes have to catch a connecting flight. So those of you that have flown, you understand what's going on there. You're going from one airport, then you have to catch a flight to the... And sometimes those flights can be close in time, and you have just very little time to get from this place to this place. Well, what if the first flight's late, running late, you take off late? And then, how am I going to catch my second flight? And he said that's minor to a lot of the problems that we have, but this causes him anxiety. He's like, well, what if... I don't get there in time. Or what if I don't make this flight or that flight? And so he talked about how much of a struggle this was for him, the anxiety and traveling. But he says this, I thought was interesting. Let's see. He says, God's providence may simply be defined as God's orchestrating all circumstances and events in the universe for His glory and for the good of His people. He said, I have to confess that anxiety is one of my most persistent temptations. It's not that I am a chicken little who is always afraid that the sky is falling. Rather, my most common temptation to anxiety occurs in connection with air travel, which I do frequently. Almost always, my travel to another city involves connecting flights at one of the other airline's hub cities. Often, my first flight from the city where I have to that I live to the hub is late, resulting in a tight connection to the second flight. So I am tempted to be anxious. Will I make my connection to my destination city? And usually I am scheduled to speak within a few hours after my scheduled arrival. So it's important to me that I make that flight. Obviously, in the course of a lifetime or compared to other people's problems, it is a minor issue. But for me, it is a major one. So my agenda is to arrive at my destination city on time and get comfortably settled in before I speak. But what if God's agenda is different? What if God's agenda is for me to be late to that meeting? Or even miss it altogether? He said, I have experienced both. Will I succumb to the temptation of anxiety and fret and fume? Or will I believe that God is in sovereign control of my travel and accept His agenda, whatever it may be? As I have struggled with anxiety in this area of my life, I have come to the conclusion that my anxiety is triggered not so much by distrust in God as by an unwillingness to submit and cheerfully accept His agenda for me. So he knows that God's in control, and he knows that God's going to take care of him. But see, he said his struggle is accepting God's will for that. And what would you say? I'll read just one more little quick paragraph, and I won't bore you with reading. But what would you say maybe that stems from? I can attest to that. If you've got an obligation to be too, why do you think he would be anxious? If he knows God's in control, why would he be anxious over either being late or missing that? Exactly. That's exactly what he goes on to say. It really comes down to pride, doesn't it? It's worried about what everybody else thinks or that the world revolves around. Hey, if I don't get there, somebody else is going to have to, on time, somebody else is going to have to fill up my time, or they're going to be worried, is he coming or anxious? And then what if I don't make it at all? Who's going to speak? I'm putting pressure on someone else. But is God not in control of that? Is it not God's meeting that he's going to? You see, I've been guilty of those things oftentimes. But the world doesn't revolve around you. If God doesn't have for you to be there on that meeting, you know what? He's already lined it up for somebody else to be there, or maybe it's not his intent for that meeting to happen. Go ahead, Wayne. That's it. We don't just... He says this in that last little paragraph. He said, I tend to think, Lord, it's important that I arrive in time to speak at the meeting. The people in charge are counting on me. What will they do if I don't arrive on time? But I have learned to say to myself, but God, it's your meeting. If you don't want me there, that's your business. And what the people are counting, and the people that are counting on me to be there will... Let's see. And what the people who are counting on me to be there will do is your business. God, I accept your agenda for this situation, whatever it may be. But see, it's tough. It's easy to talk about trusting God and believing God, but it's a whole other thing to walk that and live that out. He said, I have been greatly helped in this issue of accepting God's providential will or God's agenda, as I often call it, by the writings of John Newton, whom encountered it. And so he goes on to quote John Newton. We won't do that this morning, but he learned to accept God's will. You going to say something, Wayne? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what, you know, the next thing I had in my notes is that pretty much what you just said. We lose sight of this in the midst of our circumstances. We let our circumstances become the focal point and not our mind being stayed upon the Lord. And so anxiety, yeah, we're all prone to it. That can happen, buddy. That can happen. But, you know, even though we're instructed not to be anxious, even though we know that God is in control, He's instructed us to pray about those situations. Philippians 4:6, you know, He says, we read it earlier, but be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known unto God. In everything, every circumstance. That yes, God's in control. We are to trust Him, and we're to accept His will, but we're still to pray about those things, that His will would be done. We're still to pray over every circumstance. And it is okay. Go ahead, Wayne. That's it. That's, yeah, so not only knowing He's in control, but when He does answer, and if He's not opening the door that we keep trying to push down, we need to accept that. We need to ask God to give us faith to trust Him and ask Him to give us courage and boldness and faith to be able to accept His will. And to do it, not just accept it, but to do it cheerfully, to do it gladly, to do it with happiness in doing so. It is okay to pray for deliverance or relief from the events that cause our anxiety, but we should do so with an, this is what I had written in my notes right here at this point, but we should do so with an attitude of acceptance of God's providence and knowing His plan is better than ours. So it's okay to say, this is what I desire. Whatever the problem is causing you anxiety or frustration, to ask God to remove that or to do away with it. But we're to do that with the attitude that if He doesn't remove that, you know better than I do, God. Give me the strength to handle it. Remember, that's somewhat what happened with Paul. He prayed 3 times that God would remove the thorn in the flesh, but God told him, my grace is sufficient. And so to be willing to accept that, there's nothing wrong with asking God to change the circumstances. But if He doesn't, we can't get frustrated or angry. We are to accept those circumstances. And to do it with an attitude of gladness. Turn with me to 2 Samuel. This I maybe have shared with you before, but I think this goes right along with that. We see David being a man after God's own heart. Not perfect, but... Go ahead, Wayne. 2 Samuel 15. Go ahead. Uh-huh. 2 Samuel 15. And remember, David was considered a man after God's own heart, but David was not perfect. He had committed adultery with Bathsheba. He had had Uriah murdered, and because of that, God told him the sword will not depart from his house. And at the point where we're at in this text, he is literally running from Absalom. Absalom is... stole the hearts of the people earlier in this chapter, it was revealed to us. And Absalom is seeking to take the kingdom from him. And David is running from Absalom. And so let's look at just a few verses here to illustrate about talking about with an attitude of acceptance of God's providence, whether it lines up with what we desire or not. Look with me, let's see, we'll read verses 13 through 22 for context's sake. But verses 13 says, and there came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. So here he is, he's the king. And they tell him that Absalom And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for we shall not escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. So David says, hey, we got to get out of here. If we stay, he's going to kill us. He said, and the king's servants said unto the king, behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint. And the king went forth, and all his household after him. And the king left 10 women, which were concubines, to keep the house. And the king went forth, and all the people after him, and tarried in a place that was far off. And all his servants passed on beside him, and all the Geshurites, and all the Pelalites, and all the Gittites, 600 men which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king. Verse 19. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and an exile. Notice in verse 19, I want you to take notice, the word king is used twice. In the very first part, it says, then said the king to Ittai. Who was the king? David. So then said David to Ittai, he says to this guy, the Gittite, wherefore goest thou also with us? Or why are you going with us? But notice what he says, return to thy place and abide with who? The king. But David's going here, but he's telling him to stay back with the king. Do you know what that tells me? That David thought that God was going to give Absalom the kingdom. He says, hey, stay here with the king. Well, David is the king, but I'm going here. So my point in saying that to you is, in David's mind, at this moment, he thinks he's going to die. That God has, because of his sin, is going to take the kingdom from him. And look at, let's keep reading here for context and for his attitude. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and go down with us? He said, you know, there's no need for you to go through all this with us. You just got here yesterday. Stay here with the king. Don't go through all this trouble. He says, seeing I go whither I may, return thou and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee. And Ittai answered the king and said, as the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be. And David said to Ittai, go and pass over. And Ittai the Gittite passed over, and his men, and all the little ones that were with him. Now skip down to verse 26. So David is convinced that he's going to die, that Absalom's going to take the kingdom. And notice his response. And David said, but if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I, let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. So David, in essence, said, you know, leave it up to God. Let the will of God stand. Let the providence of God stand. Now, here am I, do what seemeth right unto you. Who does that sound like? Does that not sound like the Lord there? When he said, Lord, if there be any way possible, let this cup pass from me. But nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done. That's what David is saying. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, Wayne, if God has answered, we need to accept that. Even if it's not the answer. David didn't want to die. He didn't want to cease to exist. But he said, let God do what seemeth right unto him. And that should be our attitude in it. So we should pray over the circumstances, and there's nothing wrong with praying for relief of them, but we should be willing to accept the outcome, no matter whether it's what we desire or not. Wayne, were you going to say something? There's a lot of wisdom there. He knew when to flee and when to fight. Mm-hmm. That's right. So I want to ask you a couple things. We're running out of time here. Can you recognize the circumstances in your life, because we're all different, that cause you to be anxious? Just like this gentleman, he knew when it comes to flying, if he's got connecting flights, he was going to be prone to anxiety. Now, you may not fly, or that may not bother you. Rebecca, it stresses her out. To me, you know what, if I don't make that plane, I'll just get a ticket for the next one. It's not that big a deal, but to her, she's stressed out. And I don't say that to throw stones at her. There's other things that she doesn't really worry about. You know, finances doesn't stress her. To me, that's stressful. So I say that, can we recognize the situations in life for us that we are prone to be anxious? And then also, how about when our agenda may be different than God's? How do we respond in those moments? How do we respond when things don't go the way we desire them to go? When God's will seems to be different than our will? It's crucial that we respond properly. Not only for testimony's sake, but for your sake, my sake. Because we're not going to overcome God. And so when we fail, Wayne, you're right. When we fail to accept God's will, we're just making life harder on ourselves. Because God is going to rule, and where He doesn't rule, someone has said He overrules. Remember Jonah? Jonah said, no, I'm not going to go. God said, no, you're going. You can either go the easy way or the hard way. And Jonah found himself crying out to the Lord. Salvation is of the Lord to save him. And He will do the same for you and I. And so His will is going to be done. Will we submit to that? Will we do so? Or will we be anxious over it? And how do we respond to those situations that makes us anxious? Next week we will deal with that, and in our response we'll take up there how we respond. What do we do to conquer anxiety? What do we do to rid our lives of anxiety? There are several things we can do. God's not left us hopeless. He's not left us helpless. He's given us tools. He's given us the power that within us in the person of Jesus Christ to tackle these things. So if we let them reside and stay, it's not because God has failed. It's because we have failed to apply what He has given us. We have failed. We have yielded to the flesh rather than the Spirit. We don't really. We've let unbelief take control. Wayne? We need to ask God for the faith to believe in His providence and will, and then we need to ask God to give us a submissive heart to His will, you know? And if we'll do that sincerely, He'll do so. God will give us the faith. It causes even health problems, Brother Danny. Yeah, if it's not dealt with, it can literally make you sick. It can cause heart problems and stuff. There's a lot of things that really can, it can physically. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. How are we going to respond? That's it. I mean, you have, each and every one of us have things happen on a daily basis that are going to make us prone to anxiety. And we're instructed to trust the Lord, to lean on Him. Brother Danny, if you'd close us in prayer.